throughout this process, you need to know on my part, I've been trying to practice what some people call holy indifference. I've been trying to be indifferent to any outcome and try to discern, like, Lord, where are you at work in this? So over the months, I've grown in my excitement about the possibility of adopting Emmanuel, but you need to know I'm equally open to the proverbial door closing. I don't feel the need to force an outcome where we adopt this. I don't think that's something we have to do. I see the excitement in it. I could see how it could be a good thing, but I also at this point very much remain open to discerning that maybe this isn't what the Lord would have for us at this time, or maybe this isn't what would be best for Emmanuel. So you need to know we're still very much in this process of discernment. I do love the leaders at Emmanuel. I love the people of Emmanuel, but I really want to listen to you. I want to listen to our leadership teams. I want to listen to the people of Emmanuel and together discern what the Spirit might be asking of us as a church. If you're not familiar with Emmanuel, Emmanuel is a parish in the Anglican network in Canada, same denomination as us, and they have a beautiful history of reaching the lost, last, and least. At the moment, they rent a space in a Nazarene church in East Vancouver. They meet at 4:30 p.m. on Sundays for worship. At this point of their history, they have about plus or minus 30 adults and 10 children. They're able to hire a full-time pastor, Lloyd Lee, and a part-time administrator and worship leader. So they're, for the most part, financially self-sustaining, but they, like us, do some external fundraising to supplement their budget. But as we've looked at their finances, for the most part, they are self-sufficient. They're able to pay their bills. They're able to have a pastor, but they do a little bit of external fundraising. It might be helpful to know just a bit more of the backstory of our history with Emmanuel. So in 2016, Emmanuel was in a season of transition when their previous lead pastor resigned. And so during that season, Roger Revel and I reached out to Emmanuel and said, look, we know you're in a tough transition right now and that sometimes searching for a lead pastor can take a while. So we would be happy to preach for you on Sundays so to give you a longer runway so that you feel a bit more stability rather than just having a guest speaker week after week after week. And so in that process, we built a relationship with their leadership team and the people of Emmanuel. And in the middle of that leadership search, we actually did have conversations 2 years ago about the potential of an adoption merger. At that time, their leadership team and ours agreed that it would be best not to adopt Emmanuel, but to continue to support them until they find a new lead pastor, and that's what we did. So in 2017, they hired Lloyd Lee. And if you don't know Lloyd, he was a member of St. Peter's for a year. He's from Scotland. He was doing a year at Regent. He moved back to Scotland, and then Emmanuel brought Lloyd back to Vancouver, and we thought that was fantastic. Lloyd and Roger have a friendship predating St. Peter's, and I knew Lloyd briefly from his time at St. Peter's, and we were excited to see this partnership. 2 years have gone by since Lloyd's been here, and this year, they started a conversation about what's next for Emmanuel. And so in April, their leadership team began intentionally exploring a few different possibilities for their parish. And one of those possibilities was reopening a conversation with St. Peter's about a partnership, and in particular, the possibility of being adopted by us. So they initially reached out to me. I spoke with a couple of people on their leadership team. We got our leadership teams together to chat about this, and there was some enthusiasm and excitement about it, and so we said, let's put together a task force who can meet more regularly and talk about the nitty-gritty and try to discern what would be required for this to potentially succeed. And so we created a task force of three people from each leadership team. So the three people from St. Peter's are our two wardens, so Kate Dobson, Bub Holding, and myself. And then the three people from Emmanuel are Paul Chambers, Emma Hildebrandt, and Lloyd Lee. And since June, we've been meeting regularly to discuss the adoption merger. And so our objective as a task force is to develop a detailed adoption proposal for Emmanuel and St. Peter's to present to the congregations of our respective churches. So as we've met, we've discussed things like Sunday worship, approaches to liturgy, governance, staffing, pastoral care, communication, finances, you name it. We've tried to talk about how an adoption affects these different things. We've explored our vision and our values as a church to see where do we align Where is there already congruence and where is there some gap? And we've come to see that even though we might use different language to express some of our principles, there's a lot of commonality, and we've been encouraged by that. The result of our meetings so far is a 20-page draft proposal. We've since sent this draft to Emmanuel's team. They sent some feedback back to us. Our leadership team has met to discuss this draft. And this document, the adoption merger document, it's going to continue to evolve as we dialogue with our own church, as Emmanuel dialogues with their church. So it's very much a working document at the moment, which is why we haven't sent it out yet. But should we move forward with the adoption, this would serve as our MOU, our memorandum of understanding between Emmanuel and us moving forward. So everything that I'm about to share about what would an adoption be, how would it work, it comes out of these conversations with the task force, and it was the product of conversation and collaboration. So even though I'm the one presenting the information, this represents six people coming together and collaborating, and it represents various input we've received from our leadership teams. And it also represents a joint effort with the leadership of Emmanuel. And so what I'm presenting, they really do believe could be the best path forward for Emmanuel. So this is also me speaking on behalf of their team, and they've seen all of my notes and everything I'm going to share with you. So first, what is an adoption merger? An adoption merger is defined in the book Better Together by Tomblin and Bird as a stable or stuck church that is integrated under the vision of a stronger, vibrant, and typically larger church. That's the definition we've been using. Emmanuel would describe themselves as stuck, but they are stable. And so they're trying to find a partner to help them get unstuck and to move forward. An adoption would mean that Emmanuel takes on the name St. Peter's Fireside and unites with our vision and values, and they would also come under the guidance of our leadership team. This would be a strategic shift for St. Peter's Fireside. We would become one church in two locations. And our intention in this is not to take over Emmanuel, but to be changed alongside them in the process. We would be united by our shared vision and values, leadership and staff, sermon series, and music, and yet the location would be unique in response, or each service would be unique in response to its location, its neighborhood, and its people. So when we say unique, what we mean is if you go to St. Peter's in the morning or the evening, you shouldn't expect a homogenous experience, but a church that is responding to the people God brings to those locations and responding to the unique gospel needs of those people in those neighborhoods. And so in that way, the services will feel different even if they are united by a common vision and values system. An adoption right now would mean we would go down to one service at the morning in downtown at 10 a.m., and we would have an evening service at Emmanuel Church where they currently meet, Kingsway and 19th, at 5 p.m. Now, of course, the question is why? Why would we do this? Our leadership teams and the task force feel a mutual sense of God's guidance in this process. That's not to say, thus saith the Lord, but we've had some really powerful moments of prayer together and a sense of God's spirit. And even if we don't adopt Emmanuel, I believe this has been critical for their leadership team and helpful for them in discerning their future, so that this has been a good thing no matter what comes. But we have felt a sense of God's ongoing guidance. We do believe that if our communities were to come together, we could be better together. We could mutually strengthen one another and unite around the gospel for the sake of our city. We've found a few core commitments at work in our communities, and these are four that we've talked about at length together. A missional ecclesiology, which is a fancy way of saying we don't believe the church exists for itself, but also for the sake of others. And both of our churches, even if we are aspiring toward that on some level, believe that God wants to work in and through his people for the sake of the city, because the gospel always comes to us on its way to somebody else. Emmanuel holds that deeply in their ethos, and we do too. They're committed to gospel accessibility, and so are we. And what we mean by that is we try our best to remove whatever barriers we can from people being confused about what the gospel is all about. And so what we try to do is explain things and speak in a language to help people understand the gospel. Again, we might do that differently for our demographic and makeup, and they do that differently, but we share this commitment to making the gospel accessible. We have a desire to care for the marginalized. That came out in our survey this year. We would like to see more renewal in those efforts. And Emmanuel has a beautiful history of doing ministry with the marginalized. We bring together a desire for that, and we think we could actually learn a ton from their leadership and their people about how we could step into that more as a community. And lastly, we share our Anglican heritage. Although we are low church, if that word means anything to you, and Emmanuel might even be slightly lower church than us, we share these common values that we want to remain rooted in our Anglican distinctives. We don't want to force anyone to be Anglican, but we see the beauty of our heritage and we bring it to bear in a way that works for our context and our communities. A bigger question, though, is why does Emmanuel want to do this? And so the adoption for them would be a strategic decision, not a lifeboat decision. Emmanuel has strengths and areas of health. They're a stable, hospitable, and welcoming community committed to ministry with the marginalized, not just ministry for the marginalized. However, they've also described themselves as feeling stuck and believe that they could find a healthy expression of their history and ethos within the vision and values of St. Peter's Fireside. Once again, this is me speaking on behalf of them. I ran these words right by them, and this expresses their heart and why they would do this. So it leads to the question, though, of how. Let's say we actually said, yeah, okay, let's go for it. How do we envision this rolling out? And we identified five phases. So right now we're in phase one, which is the proposal. And it's going to take at least another month or two to really discern, should we do this and keep working on this proposal. So in the proposal phase, the task force is going to keep developing this adoption proposal, running it by our leadership teams, getting feedback from our congregations, soliciting third-party feedback from churches who've done things like this and consultants who've done things like this to see if what we've got on paper is actually a good plan and for everybody's best interests. And so over the next 2 months, we're going to keep working on this adoption proposal, and one of those phases is soliciting interest from St. Peter's. If at the end of this meeting we see like our church is like, yeah, no, this is not a good step, what that means then is we go back and we say, okay, what are some other things we could explore? And we might come up with a different solution, or it might end the conversations. But Emmanuel's aware we're very much in a discernment phase. But should our community and our leadership team discern, you know what, we can keep moving forward with this. We think we have enough interest. We still have to work out some of the details. Emmanuel would then initiate deeper conversations with their community. So their community is already aware that their leadership team are talking about being adopted by St. Peter's. They've had preliminary meetings, but they would press deeper into those meetings and say, all right, here's the proposal as it stands. What feedback do you have? And we would keep collaborating until we find a mutual plan that we think is for the best interests of Emmanuel and St. Peter's to come together. And again, if we can't find that shared plan, again, we would look for an alternative solution or it'd be an end to the conversations. But if we move into preparation and we say, we're going to adopt Emmanuel. Emmanuel is going to be adopted by us. Together, we're going to learn what it means to be a family. There's a few things that would happen. Emmanuel's leadership team would actually resign, and 1 to 2 members of their leadership team would join our leadership team to make sure that Emmanuel's voice is active and present in these ongoing months. If we do prepare together, there would be a staff restructuring. Lloyd would come on staff with us, and we would have to look at our job descriptions and see who's going to do what. And so there'd be a little bit of reordering, but Lloyd would remain on staff and he would become one of the pastors at St. Peter's Fireside, not exclusively for the East Van campus, even though that would be his primary work, but available, like I would be available to the evening and Preston would be available to the evening and the morning. So he'd be a part of our team. At the end of this phase, after community groups have also come under our supervision and guidance, we would hope again, that community groups wouldn't be split on whether you go to the evening or the morning, but united around neighborhood and mission. Just like some of the members in your community might go to the morning service or might go to the second service, we would expect that same kind of intermingling. But once all that's happened, Emmanuel would host a final service that would be for closure, that would celebrate their history as Emmanuel Church, but also celebrate this new expression that they're stepping into. So once that happens, we think that would probably take about a month, maybe a little longer. We would move into a pre-launch season. So Emmanuel wouldn't cease to have services on Sunday. They would just cease being publicly promoted. So for a 2 to 3 month window, Emmanuel would continue to meet at 5 p.m., that we would hopefully send at least 15 people from the morning services to partner with Emmanuel and build a team together. And so over those months, we would be learning who Emmanuel is, helping get a sense of their history and their ethos, building a common vision together, building DNA together, and building a sense of what it means to bring the gospel to bear in this neighborhood with these people. And so that would take 2 to 3 months. After that, we would launch public services again, which would simply mean saying, we're doing public 5 p.m. service. It's on social media. It's on announced here. We might do a wider promotion than that. But it would suddenly be, you know, we're in the morning now, one service, 10 a.m., and we have an evening service in East Van at 5 p.m. We're one church in two locations. The locations feel different, but they're united around different elements. After that, we'd be in a post-launch season for a year. Through this whole process, I know I'm just streamlining you with a lot of information that you'll get to ask questions in a second. We would form a transition team, and that would be mostly people from Emmanuel, but a few leaders from St. Peter's who are keeping the pulse of the community. How are people doing in this transition? Are they okay? Is there people that need direct conversation or pastoral care? And this team would continue to meet for a year after the transition. And around the year point, we would have a few objectives to measure. Is this a sustainable solution? Has this worked? Can we keep doing this? And if not, what are some of the alternatives? Again, these are things that we still have to discuss with Emmanuel about how would we measure that at the 1 year point. But that's the gist of how we would do it. So, next steps, we're discerning from you. We want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on this? What are your questions? And again, we really want to hear from you. If our leadership team feels there's enough interest, and as we keep praying and discerning over the next few weeks, we'll have to decide whether we think Emmanuel should go ahead and have conversations with their community. So that's actually the only decision we have to make right now, is if we think there's enough interest to keep having these conversations. Because we don't want to tell Emmanuel, hey, go and have this conversation with your church if we're just not actually all that committed and we're going to back out. We think that would be harmful. And so we are trying to make a decision, but we're not making that decision today, and we're trying to discern the pulse of our church around this proposal. And so our goal is to continue revising and strengthening the adoption proposal through feedback and ongoing conversation. And again, should we move forward with this, eventually you would have access to this document that we're working on, but we don't want to send it out in draft forms because that could create confusion down the road if you looked at one draft and there were significant changes and you were unaware. So we're trying to streamline all the information for you right now to converse around it. So knowing this, the plan may change. It may not happen at all. We want your feedback. And so we welcome any questions, any comments that you might have, and we're going to do our best to try to answer your questions. If we do run out of time, because we're going to cap the questions at 20 minutes, you're welcome to reach out to anyone on the task force, myself, Bub, or Kate, or even people from Emmanuel on the task force. We're happy to give you their information, and we want to keep this in conversation with you. And so we'll get someone to take the mic around. We are recording this, and so if you could speak your question into the mic, it'll just help members of our church who can't be here because it's summer, or for whatever reason, listen to this later and hear what you've actually asked. And I'm also going to invite Bub and Kate to the stage to help me field your questions.
My question is, what would pastoral involvement look like on a week-to-week basis? Is this a scenario where effectively you and Preston remain here and Lloyd remains there, aside from some filling in on holidays, or does it become much more fluid between the two campuses?
Yeah, there would be, again, the deep dive into the job descriptions is kind of in the next phase, but the gist of what we've discussed is Preston would be the primary caregiver for the morning, Lloyd would be the primary caregiver for the evening. I would focus primarily on vision, preaching, and teaching, and available for pastoral care at both congregations. There would be overlap. We wouldn't say, well, you have to just meet with one of these pastors. But we've also been exploring sharing the community groups load between Lloyd and Preston. And one thing we're exploring with Lloyd that he's excited about is he would oversee all of our outward partners. and try to deepen our community group's commitment in that outward rhythm, which is something our community has expressed a desire to see us grow in that way. And Lloyd is also really excited about like renewal projects and this renewal committee we've formed, and would try to bring some more leadership that way. So in that sense, our morning services would experience Lloyd through community groups and through different renewal efforts outside the city. But in terms of direct pastoral care, we also gain another pastor who wants to put more time into training up our caregiving team. So we currently have 3 or 4 people on that care team and want to continue equipping them so that we can care for people as they join our church. Knowing, again, that might change. Yeah, that's the gist.
Has there been much thought in terms of how to connect the two services, like the for us to get to know them, them to get to know us, and obviously there won't be the kind of in-between service time to mix and mingle. Thoughts on the on that?
I'm going to take that. You want to take
it? Yeah. Can you hear me if I scooch forward? That's something that's come up. That's a good question. We're going to do a whole sort of pre-launch. That's the pre-launch phase. It will be people committed from St. Peter's Fireside that will be going across to Emmanuel, and there'll be a sort of, I have no theological training, but in my view, it's sort of like a little bit of a church planting. It's getting everybody together every evening, getting to know each other, building those relationships, that sort of thing. The question's also been asked, well, what about the people that decide they want to do morning service? How do they get to know the people that are doing evening service? And that's a great question, which we haven't got all the answers for. I'm sure Alistair has some ideas, and Lloyd will too. But that's something that we're going to have to just work on, because naturally there's a separation there. But we do these events where we have these summer barbecues. We've got the community groups as well. So there might be other avenues other than the services that do it.
Curry and trivia, who's coming to dinner. And we would look at different services throughout the year where we can come together. So Ash Wednesday, Good Friday. For Easter, we might rent like a different venue for both churches, and we all come together at different points of the year in a common space. So there would be points in the church calendar. We could do that, but this would increase a bit of geographic distance between the communities that we do experience between the two services, but it would increase that gap. That would be one of the, I don't know if repercussion is the right word, but one of the outcomes of this.
This is kind of related, but would you mind expanding on the language around one church in two locations? And I have lots of questions, about how that might functionally play out, because we're talking about it now as if it's one church with two services, just in different locations. But, there's also going to be, if there's going to be primary caregivers, how are these not different campuses? Even if we do certain kind of larger events together or whatever. Questions of that kind of nature, and then how that even then translates into the larger questions of the Anglican heritage, where it's like, okay, St. Peter's is one church in two locations, but it's Annick is one church in many locations across Canada, right? Mm-hmm. So, how does if you could just expand on that kind of phrasing, that would be appreciated. Thanks.
Yeah, it's. It definitely tries to pull a bit on the diocese mindset of saying, yeah, technically Annick is one church in multiple locations. You would need to know there's no plan to kind of franchise or multi-campus St. Peter's. So this would kind of put a limit on how many locations we could have. I've always wanted to have an evening service and anticipated, maybe 5-10 years down the road, we would do it here. But if we did it here, let's say, the same question could be asked, because you have a huge gap of time between morning and evening. Anyone who's from St. John's knows that morning and evening function as separate congregations, but are still united in different ways. And so even though it's a different location, we're envisioning a similar dynamic to that. So I would be preaching at both locations. That would be one way the churches are united. If I'm not preaching one week, that whether it's Preston, Lloyd, or someone else, they would preach both morning and evening. Sharing resources, sharing staff. Right now, one of the challenges for Lloyd is he's a in a ministry of one. You know, he does have a part-time administrator, but a lot of it falls on him. Lloyd's benefit is he gets a team. And Anik is struggling because a lot of our parishes are so small, they don't have the resources for pastors to really provide the care that a church needs or even the direction it needs to move forward. So in some sense, this is us hoping to strengthen a community that already exists, while also acknowledging some of my limits of saying, if I have to run two separate entities of a church, I don't know I have the capacity for that if they are completely separate. But if they're under a common vision, common values, we're doing the same things throughout the year, that's a lot more manageable and a lot more realistic. Again, the goal isn't to make it a homogenous experience where we just make them look exactly like what we're doing in the morning. They would be different, but those differences aren't as substantial as if each campus is running its own events or its own catechism. Like, all those things would be shared. So if we have a Rhythms of Life retreat, we're promoting that in the morning and the evening, and you might meet people from the evening there. So, you know, the max services that St. Peter's Fireside will ever have is 4, right? Like, and I don't know if God will ever do that in our midst. We might continue to be the size we are, and that's what the Lord has. But the most we could ever do would be like morning twice, evening twice. If we ever grow to that point, the next logical step would be to plant an autonomous church that wouldn't be called St. Peter's Fireside, that would have its own lead pastor, that might share some of our resources to get going. So it is nuanced. I get the question you're asking, but the goal isn't to kind of franchise St. Peter's Fireside, but rather share the resources we have, but also create a clarity of, you know, I'm not, as a pastor, being like, oh, you should come to this church that I'm the pastor at, or this church, but saying, either one, it's St. Peter's Fireside. Yep.
First of all, thank you all for your work that you've already put into this. I think we all appreciate it. I have a question around the word stuck. I'm wondering exactly what that means for Emmanuel and how they have sort of assessed where they are and why they feel that way and like what barriers they're experiencing. And that's sort of the first part of my question. And then the second part is, how do they see a merger with us sort of mitigating those barriers?
Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Holding.
So, as Alistair was saying, they do have a history of serving the lost, and the least. And I feel, again, speaking on their behalf, that they feel they are stuck in that they're not seeing, they're not having the energy to continue that work, to get deeper into that work, to and it's based on time and resources, and Lloyd, even with part-time admin support, is not having enough, doesn't have enough time to dig into some of that which he really wants to with the community, while also running a church on the sort of the day-to-day and meeting pastorally with people. So where we would come in there is taking some of that load, taking some of that admin load, taking some of that preaching load, to open up more time for Lloyd and that community to serve the and to also teach us how they have served the lost and the least previously. Anything else?
I think one thing that they said, like that, I think that I just, I'm very positive, very pro this. Alistair's like this. I'm very like, let's do this. And I think it's because there's so many, God is definitely working in this, and there's so many natural synergies that seem to be happening with their leadership teams. And it's something that we talked about. We just feel that we're going to be better together. And I think they got a really good sense of that the first time as well. Like, the first meeting we had was with the whole Emmanuel leadership team and our whole leadership team. And it was just wonderful. Like, some of the prayer was very powerful, and the pictures that we had of like how things are going to be knitted together. And it was very encouraging. So I think they are like, yeah, energized by the thought of being able to join this church, and they think this church is great. They've come to some of our services as well, so I think there's excitement there. And we've talked, yeah, we've talked about the child being adopted. You know, this excitement to come into a family, and to sort of be, yeah, be included. That's my sense.
And it is difficult to speak on their behalf. We went back and forth on whether we would have some Emmanuel people here for this meeting, but we thought that would be a little premature. So there might be a future meeting where you could ask them that question directly, and they could answer in a bit more nuance. Part of what triggered this was the loss of a few key members. Similar to what we just did, they have had to send people across Canada who are moving, but they also had a really key stakeholder of their community pass away this year, and Roger was older, but it was hard on their community, and he was one of the people who really championed a lot of these things. So that they're feeling a loss of identity and losing a few key members, and they want to move forward. But Lloyd, part of Lloyd as his leader, says, "I think we could best move forward with help," and their leadership team is agreeing to that. And so, again, the goal isn't to erase Emmanuel, but to learn from them and to become something together. You had a second part. Did we answer the second part?
I was just wondering how they saw St. Peter's mitigating the marriage, which I think you were...
Yeah. Great. Joe?
I think it's becoming clear, but so is adoption permanent? And the definition that you gave, is that part of Anglican church polity? And what if they... Because stuck almost implies that they become unstuck eventually, and then...
Yeah,
so I just want a little more clarification on what is adoption. Is it part of church polity? Is it permanent? And would they keep their name?
Yeah. So we, just so everyone's clear, before any of these conversations between our leadership teams happened, we reached out to Bishop Trevor and said, "What do you think?" And Bishop Trevor thought, this could be a really great solution and interesting way forward for all of Annick, because... Frankly, as you move across Canada, we have a lot of parishes that are really struggling, and we might be able to model one potential way for those parishes to come together and work in creative ways. We have so far said the adoption is the end goal. So it's not that once the church stabilizes that suddenly it becomes Emmanuel again, but that we and the reason for that at the moment is saying, you don't want to hold out a carrot necessarily and then maybe create some resentment accidentally saying, one day this is going to be its own church again. One day this is going to be its own church again. And let's say it never happens. It feels better to get people to commit to this new expression and then be open to what God may do in the future together. We talked about church planting, and really, again, the prayer is that we would see growth at St. Peter's so that the next solution is planting a church, in which we might send people from the morning and the evening out to do that. And it might be Lloyd we send, it might be Preston we send, it might be someone else. But that would be the long-term goal. So it wouldn't be, oh, this evening is going to become its own thing again, but it's going to join in this long-term desire that St. Peter's would be a reproducing church, planting autonomous churches. Yeah, we got a bit more time.
Oh, I was going to say, since I have the mic, I have a quick question. Unsurprisingly, my question's about serving. Just, I think of the size of our congregation now, and it's a challenge to sustain our current needs. I know many of the people here would attest to filling in multiple roles during a Sunday. And if we move to two different locations, that becomes more... stretch. I mean, it's harder to ask people to come at two different times to two different locations. And I guess my question is, if we're going to take on an additional congregation, is that congregation also ready to join in serving? I hear some language about just like kind of some tiredness and weariness, and that causes some hesitation. So I'm curious if those conversations have been had and what you anticipate the energy level being with Emmanuel coming in.
I think, that was one of my biggest concerns. Actually, concerns about, like, Alistair stretching himself too much and Preston having to pick that up, and then Lloyd as well. Lloyd sends his apologies. He would love to sort of be involved. His dad is very ill at the moment, so he hasn't been around for a little bit. But And yeah, and then that was the other concern, was like the serving capacity. And I think from what I hear at Emmanuel, yes, they are tired because it's been so few doing so much for so long. So I don't know if that's a problem that we're going to solve right away. I think it is going to be hard. It's not going to be an easy thing. This is not an easy thing. An easy thing would be to do nothing, right? And we just carry on as we are. So this will be a bigger ask, I think, and probably a bigger ask from St. Peter's initially. But I think that the way that Alistair's described the launch and how we might do the pre-launch, that will hopefully invigorate that commitment again and maybe just drive some enthusiasm and excitement for it. So that's my hope. But yeah, Sainam, it's something that we've got to work through, I think.
The current service, the way it's structured too, has very different setup teardown demands. So they're not setting up from scratch like that. And that's a big taxing serving role, right? So if we would ask people to serve at their primary service, again, my hope is like if you're traveling one weekend and you can't get back for Sunday morning, like you should go to the evening service if you want to. And it's not like they're that separate. And people occasionally from the evening might come to the morning, but you would serve at one service predominantly. And we wouldn't be asked, like the band, for example, the expectation wouldn't be, oh, you're playing at the morning and the evening. The worship leader might, but there would be different musicians supporting that. And again, the way that that space is oriented, and as we've been moving, it's a smaller band is better for the space than some big thing anyway. So, as Kate said, there'd be some demand on serving, but we'd hope to mitigate that as much as possible too. Marla Campbell. We've got 2 more minutes for Q&A. So again, if we didn't get to your question, you're welcome to reach out to us directly.
So I was happy to see that you're thinking about doing just one service in the morning for the sake of the ministry coordinator. I think that's great. I'm serious. And then, but at the same time, I don't want to be kind of overly protective of St. Peter's, but I also just want to think about what does that mean for us to only have one service in the morning, especially because I know thinking about empty seats has been important to us in the past. And so I'm just wondering, are there kind of sacrifices to us as a community in general we should be talking about, and then specific to being at one service? Will this mean actually, even though there's a merging of visions, seems like there's on the same page between these two communities, but in what would that be an example of how we'll have a different expression of that sort of focus? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let me try to tackle that the best I can. Again, the hope is that we would be sending some people. So in the empty seats scenario, that creates some space. Going down to one service would be a temporary thing. I can't say for how long, probably at least a year. It's always hard to anticipate those things. So we're always gonna kind of respond to, you know, the room dynamic, and once seats are over 70 to 80% full, sociologists say, then people are less likely to feel that there's a place for them, blah, 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 blah. We're always responding to that. The people that this would affect the most, I think, is children's ministry volunteers. Because essentially we're saying, on the Sundays you serve, there's no second service for you in the morning. So if you want to go to a service, you need to go to the evening. And so we are weighing through that and talking through that and talking about different possible solutions. There would be children in the evening because there would be room in their budget to have like a quarter-time children person. So that would be a gain for us to say both of our services actually have childcare now. But we would hopefully go back to 2 services in the morning as soon as it's appropriate. So it's not a long-term shift in that front. I think that captured the... Okay. I think we have one from Moran. Oh.
Okay, my question is, so if we're sending some people from the morning service to the evening service, at least initially, would there ever be a time, either early on or at least once things were underway, that we would invite some of the people from the evening service to the morning service?
Absolutely. We've just tried to be careful in this phase of not trying to make Emmanuel think they just have to become us. So you just come downtown and do our thing. That would be easy. We wouldn't need to have a meeting about it. Right? If we were like, hey, 40 people are going to join our church, we would all be like, oh, great, That's awesome. And we would keep doing life together. But that wouldn't necessarily be honoring their heritage and their history and their mission. And so that could be a backup plan, but we haven't explored that in depth because we're trying to say there's something good here. And we think if we partner with this, we would change in the process in a positive way as well. And so, but there would be times in the year where, even in that pre-launch phase, saying you should come downtown and you should get to know more people downtown. So we would definitely encourage that back and forth. So we'll take Miranda, and then Richard has been eyeing me, so that'll be it. Again, I'm not trying to shut down conversation. I just want to be sensitive to your day. If you do have questions or comments that we haven't gotten to, please reach out. We really do want to hear from you.
So the question I have, you kind of touched on it, but it had to do with children's ministry, saying that both services would have it. But how would Kate and Emily's role change, and do they already have children's ministry at Emmanuel, and what would it look like to merge that with ours?
Yeah, they already have kids ministry at Emmanuel. It's currently completely volunteer run. So to have a quarter time person would be a huge benefit, just even for scheduling and helping. We would share curriculum, so whatever curriculum we're using in the morning would be used in the evening. So Kate would focus on the morning alone. And she's not here today, but she's been very excited about the idea of having a St. Peter's evening. That would be her church service. So we would be, again, trying to mitigate that. Some of the things we've been entertaining, and again, we don't have an answer on this, is even hiring on a weekly basis some childminders to help support, because children's ministry is just a taxing area of service, and we want to make sure we're caring for our kids and creating the safest environment possible while supporting families. So we're always open to investing more in that. So we're exploring different solutions. Yeah. Richard, last one. You have 2 minutes max.
I should probably stand. I'm giving an opinion. I have an opinion. So I'm not here as formally speaking for the church. They are very wisely should never allow me to do that. But you know, I've been coming since the very first service here. And I've been also, many of you probably don't know, I've been actually attending Emmanuel once or twice a month for about 6 to 9 months. So I feel I'm in a, other than maybe Clara, who's been going to, I think, attending time to time, I feel I can kind of speak to this. I'm very, like Kate, very bullish on Emerge. I think this would be an excellent thing. I have 7 or 8 reasons. I'll just mention 2. At least 7 or 8. I could probably think of more. I think we have an amazing pastoral staff between Alistair and Preston. I think very highly of Lloyd. I think we would have a superstar team. I really think we could put it up there. That's not a competition, but up there with any church in the city in terms of like the gifts that they all have. And you know, I'm an old friend. I've known Lloyd a long time as well, him being an older member of the congregation. Secondly, I think that their culture, obviously, you know, when two things merge and become one, there's a symbiotic relationship, and so you necessarily change each other. I think their, you know, church cultures are strong and weak in different ways. We're strong certain ways where they're weak where we're strong, and I think I definitely see that merge really strengthening who we can be. I think that sometimes it's good to have a kick in the butt for a church. I think comfort can be an enemy of many good things. I think this is a kick here for us. I think would be a good thing for our culture. I think it would strengthen it for many reasons I won't get into.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll just let, if we go with this, I'll let Richard lead the vision from here on out. So again, if you do have like any thoughts that you just haven't expressed, please reach out. We really do want to hear from you. We do want to let this be an evolving process, and we will keep you in the loop. For now, we're just going to hand out some interest cards. These are not like full-fledged commitments, but we're trying to get the interest. Okay, Kate says they are. But you'll read the language. If we were to proceed with this adoption, and if there is going to be an evening service at 5 p.m. in East Vancouver, would you be interested in joining the launch team for that? And so the commitment on a launch team would be when we begin pre-launch phase, you would be at those 5 p.m. meetings every Sunday. You would commit to building relationships with the members of Emmanuel and getting to know their history and their stories and their ethos. And you would commit to being at the evening service as much as possible, participating as a full member for at least a year. So again, you can check yes, you can check no. You can check maybe. Again, this is just helping us get a sense of what the initial interest is as we keep moving forward. And again, we'll keep you in the loop as these things progress. So we'll just give you a couple minutes to think through that and do that. I'm just going to throw our emails up. So again, for the task force, you can speak to Bob, Kate, or myself. There's our emails. We'd be happy just to get your thoughts in an email message, or if you want to grab a coffee or talk on the phone. We really want to hear you out in this process and be discerning and listen to the Spirit and follow whatever the Lord might be asking, whether that's to walk through this door or to let it close. Okay, so on your way out, if you can just make sure to put them in the basket. Again, we're very much in process here. We're just trying to catch you up to speed of the conversation so far. Please, when you think of this, think of it as an ongoing conversation. And that's where we are right now. And as things progress, we'll let you know. So why don't we stand as Preston prays for us.
Okay, will you join me in prayer? Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we come before you today and we give you great and sincere thanks for St. Peter's Fireside, this church that you have blessed us with to journey towards you together in. And we give you sincere thanks for Emmanuel Church, our brothers and sisters in Christ who represent you as being God with us in this city as well. We thank you for their leadership and our leadership teams in these conversations, and we want to simply come to you with open hands and lay this before you as Lord of the church and ask for your mind, Jesus, to discern and for you to lead us and for you to guide us. We pray that we will only do and make decisions in accordance with your will, and may any other motive or interest or desire in this that's not of you to be brought forward and clarified. And if anything is driving on either side that's not of you, Jesus, will you kill it and purify our hearts to see you and desire you, and may our churches, either individually or collectively together in the future, only exist to bring you glory and to proclaim your name. We pray all these things in your holy name. Amen.
Amen.